honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is John Fitizoff, 92 years old, of Tracy, California. During World War II, he served in the U.S. Merchant Marine, and when we left off, the teenager was in a military hospital after a bout with appendicitis. So take me inside the brain of that teenager in this hospital on Guadalcanal. You're surrounded by these Marines who have awful injuries, missing limbs, physical, emotional, psychological wounds they're dealing with. What was going through your mind, and how long did you stay there in that hospital?
I was in that hospital for about 3 weeks, maybe about a month. As a matter of fact, one of the corpsmen over there was mopping the floors, you know, and he says, you look like you're good enough to give us a hand, give her a clean sweep fore and aft. And I says, look, if I'm well enough to sweep this place fore and aft, I'm ready to get the hell out of here and get another ship. So it wasn't a couple of days later. I didn't have no clothes, nothing. They found a duffel bag on somebody that probably maybe didn't make it or whatever it was. So the clothes wasn't what you call a good fit. So anyway, we made it through that deal finally. And then I hear on the PA system, John Fedosoff, report to so-and-so at headquarters. But anyway, I go there. The guy that was in charge, it was a Coast Guard. He told me, okay, he said, John, he says, we have a ship for you. I says, but I understand when I signed ship's articles that you were to get me back as fast as humanly possible to my ship, wherever it may be. He says, John, you're absolutely correct. But the only trouble is, if you think you're going to wait here for a ship to come here for us to put you out of, you might be standing on this beach for 20 years. I recommend strongly you take this ship we're getting you and get out of here. Then they took me out to the ship. I'm on the deck there, and I'm talking to one of the guys on the ship. So I'm telling you, and I noticed on the hatches, on these freighters over the hatches, they had cradles built to where they put the Higgin boats on there. So I look at that, and every hatch had one. It isn't adding up to me, anything too hot, So I'm telling the guy, I said, where'd you guys? Oh, he says, an Espirito Santos. They came aboard and put these cradles on the ship over the hatches, and we don't know what the hell. So anyway, he says, you want to see something? He says, come here. So he goes over to one of the hatches that was still open to it, where we can look down into it. And I looked down in there, and everything in there was loaded in cargo nets. You know what they did is they came, brought the cargo in these cargo nets, dropped it in the hole. Now, whether they had little jitneys down there to pull the things, I don't know. But anyway, I know that hole was, pretty well filled with war stuff. That meant they wanted to get it off the ship real quick. So then we're on the ship, and we're starting to pull anchor. And I noticed all the other ships around. There was a whole ton of ships. They were all pulling anchor, and they're all putting out to sea. And they finally formed a convoy. Now, I don't know. I don't remember them. 10,000 yards or whatever it was, forward and aft, port and starboard, where there was another ship. So we were on the deck, and we were sailing. I said, I'm going to go up and take a look, So I climbed up the mast up to where the crow's nest was, and I looked out there, and it amazed me. I never knew they could amass so many ships at any one time. I came down, and I told the guys, we ought to go up there and take a look. If I was some Japanese on a mountain to wherever we're going, and I saw this coming, man, I'm telling you, I'd find myself a wholesome place. Because it was huge and massive. And so early in the morning, dark morning, we dropped anchor, and we found out that the island that we were at was Okinawa. And the minute daylight came, that's when all hell broke loose. My battle station was right off the wing of the wheelhouse there. And what I understand why they did that was they took young kids that had good legs in case communications broke down. They could give you some orders to where you can take it to different parts of the ship. But it was, you know, I'm watching these planes being shot then, and all the guns on the ship were all firing, making a lot of noise. It was a bad scene. We were there for about 11 or 12 days. The one that I still remember to this day is I was by watching, you know, I had a box seat, you know, where my battle station was. I was up out on this wing, you know, and I could see pretty good. And then I got to realizing that usually the first place, these kamikaze, which were hot and heavy over there, that's one of the first places they fly into because it's a pretty big target, you know, and that's where the ship is being, you know, run by. But anyway, we were lucky there.
Well, I'm sure you saw a lot of that. If you talk about you having a box seat, you're seeing these kamikazes. You're seeing a whole lot of action in the air. What did that look like, and how nerve-wracking or frightening was that?
Well, I was watching this one plane. I could see him as he was, you know, on a downward pattern. And back there, in back of all the ships that were there, there was this Australian cruiser. He was there to more or less kind of protect some of the ships. And you can see that the Japanese plane, he was heading for him. And I'm saying to myself, my God, don't they see that guy, you know? Yeah, why don't they fire or nothing, you know? I go, wow, this is going to... And just about that time, that whole side of that cruiser, all their guns lit up. I could almost swear that they stopped that plane midair, and there was all a lot of pieces that fell into the water. That kind of relieved some of the strain.
And what was that ship that you were on at that time?
The Clermont Victory. Yeah, that's thank God for the Clermont Victory, because I was able to go in a storeroom there, in a swap shop or whatever they call it. You know, I was able to get some halfway decent clothes that fit.
This may sound like a dumb question, but I've got to ask it, because here you're a teenager out here in this incredible battle and the biggest swarm of kamikazes that's ever occurred before there off Okinawa. Were you scared? Did you fear for your life?
Not really. There was so much to do, but we got so pooped that we were almost numb because we didn't really get any sleep at all. Because the minute you tried to bunk down or try to get a little snooze, the alarm went off. And everybody slept with their, they didn't sleep with their helmets on, but they were on the bed, by the head of the bed. But your life preserver, you slept with your life preserver when you can get a couple of 15, 20 minutes, because that alarm was constantly going off.
So you sleep with your life preserver because if your ship gets torpedoed or hit while you're sleeping, that way you're going to survive? Is that why you sleep with the life preserver?
Yeah, survival. You know, that's one of man's most important things is survival.
When you mentioned earlier, just kind of in passing, the threat of submarines, was that threat always hypothetical or did it ever materialize for you?
No, that was always on your mind. You never knew when or where. You know, you couldn't see them. You know, funny thing, I was over here at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Lodge over here in Tracy, and I passing by, I see a lot of cars there, so I stopped in. So they were having some kind of a get-together. So we were in there talking, and one guy asked me, he says, what were you in? He says, I was in the Merchant Marine. Oh, he says, they didn't have any guns on them ships. Yeah, I don't know whether he was in the Navy or what. I said, no, I said, you're mistaken. I says, there was a 3-inch gun on the bow, 5-inch gun on the stern, and I believe it was 3 20-millimeters on the starboard and 3 20-millimeters on the port side. So we had all them guns on the ship. But what good are you standing on a ship and your ship is sinking and you can't see the sub to torpedo you? You know, what the hell good is them guns going to do you? I said, that isn't important.
Did you guys ever have a close call with a sub?
No, not really. Thank God for that. The good Lord was with me all the way around, with my brother, and keeping me in a good, safe spot.
How about the weather? Did you ever have to sail through some typhoons or some really rocky seas?
Yeah, we did when we went through the Panama Canal and we were in the Caribbean. We caught the tail end of a storm, and I'm telling you, I wouldn't want to be in another one. All you did, you feet it, when you were in your bunk, your feet would slide forward, you know, and hit the locker that were down by your feet, and hit another big wave, and then your head had hit the bulkhead, you know. So you're laughing back and forth, and you're not getting any sleep. You couldn't go out on deck. We had taken these 55-gallon drums that had paint or oil or whatever it was, and we took around a quarter inch or a half inch cable. We cabled them right to the bulkhead there or the side of the ship, that railing or whatever you want to call it. Two guys get on one end of the cable, the other guy get on the other cable, and the boat would pull tight as could be, and then they put these Crosby clamps on them to where they can clamp the two cables together. So when it got safe to go out onto the deck, we took a look, and as much as we tried to secure those 55-gallon drums were gone.
So that's some pretty significant weather that wiped it clean like that.
Well, you would be on the wheel, you know, and you're going along, you're steering the ship, and all of a sudden you feel yourself going up on a wave, and a person, the ship coming, boom, hit the water, and you count one, two, three, and tons of water would come all over the ship, you know.
How many ships did you end up serving on?
Four. Yeah, and that in the Merchant Marine, when you came back, like we were going 9 months and one day on that Mill and Griffith, that was the first ship. And when you came back to the States, you only had, I think it was 1 week, 7 days, to where you had to, if you weren't in, you know, on another ship, you got drafted. So it wasn't a case where you came home and you had a hell of a vacation.
The four ships you were on, were they all the same kind of ships or were they different?
Yeah, they were all freighters. They were Liberty ships and Victory ships. Everything that moved had to move by ship. There were no highways. There were no railroad tracks. There was nothing but water. And the only way you're going to get that stuff is by ship. There was pretty near 1,000 ships, as strange as it sounds, there was pretty near 1,000 ships that were sunk. All I could say is when they told me, you know, that the war was over, I said, thank God at last.
You know, and you mentioned earlier that your understanding that President Roosevelt wanted Merchant Marines included in the GI Bill. Of course, he was gone by the time the war ended, and you guys were not included, and it wasn't for another 40 years till they said, you guys are veterans.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt told Congress, you better put the Merchant Marine in the GI Bill and make them, you know, veterans. He said that without them, we'd have a hell of a time trying to win that war, because you can only get fly in so many people. You needed them ships. You need a lot of tonnage. So when he died, you know, Congress, they just completely forgot about us, you know. And then Harry Truman was going to give a letter, a thank you letter, to the Merchant Marine and a lapel pin. I never got mine, but these guys standing there with a piece of paper, you know, and a lapel pin, and they got the highest kill rate.
How angry did that make you that here you did serve your country and risk your life for your country, and you didn't get the same benefits that veterans from other services got?
It absolutely, really, I can't use the language on it, you know, but anyway, I am right up to this day, this minute, this second that we are sitting here, I'm so disappointed, really disappointed in our country on how they've neglected the Merchant Marine. We finally got our veteran status. The only reason we got the veteran status was three merchant seamen sued the federal government. So now they got veteran status. So then, you know, some of the politicians, you know, get a little weepy and the tears in their eyes. Oh, these wonderful men, you know, we're going to have to do something for them. So they sent the bill up, belated thank you to the Merchant Marine, and it passed the House of Representatives except for one abstaining vote. Went up there to Harry Reid, and Harry Reid sat on it till dead. It's no longer around anything. Then, I don't know if she was House of Representatives or the Senate, she put a bill in there for the Merchant Marine for a one-time pension of $25,000 one time. Well, they're all dead, the merchant mariners. I'm the only dupe standing. I'm too stupid to die, you know. And here they are. I called up and it was floating around, you know. I keep calling up because I think the merchant seamen are entitled to something, but they got absolutely nothing. I wanted to go back to school because I quit high school, so there was nothing there for me.
What did it mean to you when they finally said, hey, you guys from the Merchant Marines, you're veterans too? What did that mean to you?
About time. Here's something. Paul, did you know that the Merchant Marine had a hymn?
Heave ho, right?
Well, yeah, heave ho, my lads, heave ho. It's a long, long way to go. We can cross any ocean, cross any sea. Give us the goods and we'll deliver. Damn the submarine, we're the men of the Merchant Marine. They had their hymn. And every time I listened closely, like when they have the 4th of July or some military program in Washington, they'll play all the hymns, but never the Merchant Marine hymn. Never.
Well, one thing that's been neat, and I've got an application here for you. Maybe some of your friends here in Tracy have been on it, but you know we have these honor flights to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial. And when they come back for Central Valley Honor Flight out of Fresno, when they land back at the airport and they come through the terminal and there's people there cheering for them, the band plays the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Coast Guard, the Air Force, and the Merchant Marines. So if you go on that flight, you'll get to hear it when you come home.
I want to hear it all the time, all the time.
Well, if there's anything else you want to add, feel free, but I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. I'm sorry that that wasn't recognized the way it should have been for so long, but thank you for serving and thank you for telling us about it. Is there something that you'd say at age 92, almost 93, that you're most proud of or most thankful for?
The thing that I am most proud of is that I'm living in the United States. You know, we have our problems and we got a heck of a lot of them right now. And if anybody would just take and stop for a minute and think of all these young men in cemeteries all over the world are laying in that cold, cold ground for one reason and one reason only, and that was to make you safe here in the United States. And all I got to say to people who don't respect the country, respect the flag, I hope they have the sense to realize that this is a great country.
That is John Fitizoff, 92 years old, of Tracy, California. Find photos of John and his late brother Jim at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And in John's honor, the music you're hearing now is the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy Band performing Heave Ho as part of its Armed Forces medley. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.